You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, I'll look at pharmaceutical companies and the way they do business. In 1997, the Harris Poll began asking consumers to rate different industries, like airlines, food companies, supermarkets, all kinds of different industries. They asked people, do the companies, do they do a good job, a bad job, or how would you rate them in serving their customers? And can you guess the industry that has fallen the furthest since that year poll started? It's the pharmaceutical industry. In 1997, 79% of the people polled throughout the industry, they all said that the people there were doing a pretty good job serving its customers. But in 2004, that number has fallen to 44%. The public says, wow, it slid 35 points since then, down from 79% people who thought it was doing okay to 44%. And that ranks them 11th in the list of companies consumers were asked to rate, just above oil companies and health insurance providers. And you know what great esteem those two companies are held. So what's going on? Are the companies doing a bad job at getting their message out, or are the consumers better now at understanding the way the drug companies work, and if they do, they don't like it? Are the companies better at satisfying their stockholders than at curing diseases? That's what we're going to talk about for the rest of this hour. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. With us is Dr. Marcia Angel, a former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. She's written a scathing critique of the drug industry. She is president and CEO of the New England Journal of Medicine. She worked there more than 21 years. She's also senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School and author of The Truth About Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It, just out by Random House. She joins us by phone from Boston. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Angel.
Thank you, Ara. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. Also with us is Alan F. Holmer. He's president and CEO of the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA, as it's called. He joins us from our NPR studios in Washington. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Hello, Ira.
Thank you for being with us. Marcia Angel, the title of your book is pretty scathing. How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. How do they deceive us?
Well, what they want Americans to believe is that they have to charge these very high and rapidly increasing drug prices in order to cover their research costs. And that implies that they're spending most of their money on research and that afterwards they have very little left over. But neither of those things is true. They actually spend relatively little on research and development. And afterwards, they have enough left over to make them, year after year, consistently, the most profitable industry in the United States. They fell slightly last year from first place to third place, but there were a couple of special circumstances for that. Still, their profits were well above the median for the Fortune 500 companies.
Alan Holmer, how do you respond to that?
I guess that there are a number of different aspects to that. I mean, these are companies that have as there are tens of thousands of scientists and other researchers whose life's work is to work on the kinds of diseases that Dr. Kaur just spoke about. And I think one of the things that it's useful that you set this up the way that you did, because it explained how tremendously difficult it is to be able to come up with a tablet that an individual can swallow that will go in their bloodstream, that will then find its way to that little box inside the cell where the receptor sites live and tell that receptor site either to start doing something or to stop doing something. That is a tremendously, tremendously difficult process where there are massively more failures than there are successes. And just to go to the specific issue of memory, our companies have 22 medicines in development for Alzheimer's. There's a reason why the United States by far leads the world in pharmaceutical innovation, and that's because we have an environment here, including the profit motive, that allows these companies to be so successful in bringing wonderful new medicines to patients. I mean, if you talk to doctors and ask them, what are the therapies that you now have, say, for cancer or for AIDS or for Alzheimer's or for other diseases compared to what you had two decades ago, and they'll tell you that there has been an extraordinary increase in the extent to which they're able to prescribe medicines to solve those problems. And that is part of the reason. I'd like to expand on this a bit. It's part of the reason, I think, why there is concern on the part of patients with respect to the amount that they pay for their medicines. And let me just take 30 more seconds on this.
Why are drugs so expensive?
It's really two reasons. One, I think it needs to be considered in the context of the extraordinary value that these medicines provide. And second, we'll get to this in a minute, the very high cost of getting a medicine to market. But over the course of the last decade or two, patients have increasingly relied on medicines to help them avoid surgery and to avoid going to the hospital. And as they have become increasingly reliant on medicines, our insurance system has not kept pace. When you go to the hospital, you pay about 2.5% of the hospital costs out of pocket. When you get a prescription filled, on average, Americans pay about 40% out of pocket. And that's why you have a tremendous focus on the cost of medicines. And we need to make sure that our insurance system catches up with the increased reliance that patients and doctors have on medicines.
Dr. Angel?
Well, no insurance company or any other payer, employers, the government, or certainly individuals can afford to keep up with these skyrocketing prices. Prescription drugs are the fastest rising component of the health care bill. They're now rising at a rate over 3 times the rate of inflation. So the argument that Mr. Homer is making, that we should find someone to pay for it, it leaves out the fact that nobody can continue to pay for this. Let me say a few words about the much vaunted innovation. This is an industry that's pretty much given up innovation. Its major output now is trivial variations of top-selling drugs already on the market called me-too drugs. This is what this industry mainly turns out. For innovation, it feeds off of publicly funded research in universities and government labs. This is where the innovation occurs, even for the original in a series of Me Too drugs. So this is not an innovative industry. Most of its research and development dollars are spent at the end of the research and development process.
Give me an example, in clinical
trials.
Well, we talked about something like Dr. Cower in the last segment, who was doing pure research and memory, out of which a drug company would take that research and then possibly make a drug out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an idea. What is a Me Too drug? Give me an example of one that you might pick out.
Lipitor is a Me Too drug. This is the top-selling drug in the world, but it's the fourth of a series of 6 cholesterol-lowering drugs of the same type. The first one, Mevacor, came on the market in 1987 and was based primarily on publicly funded research in universities. And then after that, it was a simple matter for companies to produce very similar drugs and get a place in the market by promoting them incessantly. In fact, there is no reason to believe, usually, that one Me Too drug is any better than another because the companies never test them head-to-head at equivalent doses. They just market them as though they were improvements. For all we know, the cholesterol-lowering drugs are not getting better and better. They're getting worse and worse. We just don't know the answer.
Alan Homer, any response?
Ira, I just find that comment astonishing. Lipitor is supposedly a Me Too drug. Dr. Angel would appear to have preferred that Lipitor would never have been invented. I think there are lots and lots of patients out there that are glad that Lipitor was invented. She says that the companies have given up on innovation. Well, if they have, why do we have over 400 medicines currently in development for cancer? And let me just give you one other example of the Me Too drugs that she talks about. My children are 24 and 22. They both have a disease called cystic fibrosis. It used to be that when they had pneumonia or bronchitis in their lungs, they had to get stabbed in their forearm so that a medicine called tobramycin could be received intravenously, go through the bloodstream, and hopefully be able to get to the lungs. Mm-hmm. Then along came a company called Pathogenesis Corporation in Seattle. They came up with a new medicine called Tobi. They took the old drug, tobramycin, and were able to develop a new inhaled version. And that's the medicine that my children take when they get particularly sick, that's able to combat the bacteria and the infection that they have in their lungs. Under Dr. Angel's view, you know, this is a me-too medicine. It's not a new molecular entity. It didn't get priority review at the Food and Drug Administration. And yet tell that to the 30,000 patients in this country who have cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to call the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation today and say, do you think Toby is a wonderful, innovative medicine? They'd tell you absolutely.
How much money? So how much money is spent on cystic fibrosis drug research every year?
I don't have the specific number.
More than on Lipitor, or more than on cholesterol, or more than on heart disease, or equal amounts, or close to them, or hardly near them.
There are, I know, well over 10 medicines that are currently in development for cystic fibrosis. It's also true, though, that I think drug companies do focus on those diseases that are going to have the greatest impact for patients generally. And so that's why
they
have a focus.
So they wouldn't focus on cystic fibrosis?
There are many companies that do have medicines in development for cystic fibrosis. There are more medicines in development for cancer, for AIDS, for Alzheimer's and other diseases. I think on net, that's a good thing. And I can say that even though I'm a parent that's passionately concerned.
Aren't you a little bit of angry that the companies to focus on these other drugs but not on the orphan diseases that are affecting your own children?
Well, I think there are.
That doesn't make you angry at all, huh?
No, it doesn't. Because again, trying to be balanced about it, if there are millions and millions and millions of patients either who have cancer or are going to have cancer, I can understand why we as a society would want the companies to be able to focus on that. But we also want companies to be focusing as well on cystic fibrosis or other orphan diseases. That's why Congress passed the Orphan Drug Act, and that's why companies have responded to that and are doing a substantial amount of research on cystic fibrosis and other rare diseases. Are they spending more on cancer or heart disease? Well, of course they are, but I don't think that should be held against the pharmaceutical industry, that they're trying to benefit the maximum number of patients possible.
Dr. Angel?
Well, what the pharmaceutical companies are really doing is targeting mainly, essentially, normal people, because there are many more normal people in this country than there are sick people. So they make drugs, me-too drugs, which is not risky and easy to do, not very costly. And then they try to convince essentially normal people that they have medical conditions for which they need these drugs. An example is erectile dysfunction. Young men are being convinced that any performance less than 110% is a disorder called erectile dysfunction, and they should take one of the three Me Too drugs out there for it. This is a huge potential market. Makers of antidepressants have expanded the use for those and are convincing people who may be shy from time to time, and which of us isn't shy from time to time, have a disorder called social anxiety disorder, and they need to take Paxil for that. So they're pushing their drugs to...
The Ask Your Doctor campaign.
That's right, exactly, to expand the market by promoting essentially trivial ailments rather than the drugs.
We're talking about drugs this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Alan Homer, has this been the Ask Your Doctor campaign, has it been successful?
Well, I mean, the implication is that, oh my gosh, horror of horrors, we're having patients talk to doctors about conditions that they might not otherwise have talked to their doctor about. There was mention made of erectile dysfunction. There are millions of American men who went in to see their doctor about for an erectile dysfunction medicine and were diagnosed with diabetes or with high blood pressure or some other kind of heart problem.
Well, why not go have a checkup?
The more information we can get out to patients so they can have an informed conversation with their doctor, the better off those patients are going to be, the better off our healthcare system is going to be. I mean, take for example, diabetes. There are 6 million patients in this country who have diabetes and who don't know it. Mm-hmm. And yet as a society, we spent last year $1.3 billion on amputations of lower limbs of diabetes patients. Wouldn't it have been better if people had had a chance to see an ad for diabetes and had begun a conversation with their doctor about that, so they would have been better off, so they'd have their lower limbs, and so we would have had those savings to the healthcare system?
Do you have an ad for diabetes?
I'm sorry?
You said wouldn't it have been better if they had seen an ad for diabetes? I'm asking, do you have an ad for diabetes that you show?
Yes, there are companies that do have ads for diabetes. There are certainly companies that have ads for depression. A third of the people in this country that have depression never even seek treatment for it. I know a lot of people that have had symptoms of depression, like high anxiety. They said, "Oh, I've got high anxiety." Had no idea that they had depression, and they should be seeking treatment for it.
Dr. Angel?
Well, these ads don't show. They don't show older men with diabetes who have erectile dysfunction. They show young, healthy couples on getaway weekends or young athletes, and there's precious little information conveyed in an ad that shows a couple flirting with each other. Similarly, most of the ads are 30-second spots of fairly nice-looking people out in fields of flowers, and the message is, take our drug and you'll look like these people, and you too will be in fields of flowers. There's no information there. This is selling drugs, pure and simple.
I want to know how many people showed up with their doctor saying, I have a 4-hour erection. If that's on the ad, Doc, you know, Alan, how many people do you think have shown up with that one?
I don't have a clue.
Okay.
Your guess would be as good as mine.
It's one of the side effects in the ads that they keep telling you. You know, my kids and friends say, Dad, you know, or they see somebody throwing a football through a tire. They say, the drug helped me do that, you know, because I have to ask my doctor.
Yeah, but I guess the important point is
the point I would say that if you want a cure, you know, if you wanted them to ask something about their health, they should go ask about their health. I saw an ad the other day for ask your doctor about Wellbutrin. I mean, that's an antidepressant drug. I mean, but you go into your doctor and say, Doctor, do I need Wellbutrin? Is that what it's supposed to happen?
Again, a third of the people in this country who have depression don't seek treatment for it. So to the extent that you can get information out to patients about the symptoms of depression so they can begin a conversation with their doctor, that's a good thing. I mean, increasingly, we're moving to consumers being more engaged in their health care, having more information. And to somehow say, well, you know, we're going to abolish direct-to-consumer advertising or put severe restrictions on it, it seems to me that would be a negative step as far as a consumer-driven healthcare system is concerned.
Okay, we're going to come back, take a short break, come back with Dr. Marcia Angel and Alan Homer, and more of your calls, so stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about drugs and the prices and the costs and all kinds of things about them with my guest, Dr. Marcia Angel, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and author of new book, The Truth About Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It, just out by Random House. Alan Homer, who is president and CEO of the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or Pharma. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones. Alex in Miami. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Getting set for another hurricane?
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay. Well, all the best. Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a comment. I wanted to, first of all, state that I think pharmaceutical companies provide great products that save lives, and that the cost is high. I don't think it should be that high, but I don't think that is the fault of the pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm.
They have a right to their profits. Like one of your guests was saying, the profit motive certainly gives incentive to provide all these great products. And I think the problem is the taking of the patents of these pharmaceutical companies that I think it is after 10 years, the record number of years, they go generic, and these companies cannot count on long-term profits.
Yeah. Well, there is the point that that Alan Homer made, that this is a business, and you're right, it's a business, and if it's a publicly traded company, you have to maximize the profits for your stockholders.
Right, but yeah. I don't think there is a conflict between that and patient benefits. I think but patients will also benefit from that because prices will come down if pharmaceutical companies were left mm-hmm. alone by the government. They were able to keep mm-hmm. their rights to their products as they should have it, and were able to plan long range and use those long-term profits to fund further research.
Dr. Angel, how do you react to that?
Well, prices never come down. The price of brand-name drugs never drops. The government says nothing about prices, and that's the problem. The pharmaceutical companies can charge whatever the market will bear, and it will bear quite a lot. As for these being businesses, yes, they are businesses in the sense that, first of all, that they're investor-owned, obviously, and it's their fiduciary obligation to maximize profits. And they're free to make whatever drugs they like, me-too drugs instead of innovative drugs, increasingly, and charge whatever the traffic will bear. But at the same time, they are utterly dependent on government-funded research. Nearly every cancer drug and AIDS drug is based on government-funded research. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But they are utterly dependent on this, and they are utterly dependent on government-granted monopoly rights. So, yes, they're free and they're businesses, but not exactly. They get many special favors from the government.
Well, if you can, go ahead.
Let me make one quick point on that, if I could. Dr. Angel says prices never come down and these Me Too medicines aren't worthy of much. She was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. Here's what the New England Journal of Medicine said in 2004. It said when the second product comes along in the same class, say it's a new cholesterol-lowering medicine, they found that they say its manufacturers must offer better value. That means that the product must lead to better patient outcomes or it must be less expensive. That's from the same New England Journal of Medicine, a peer-reviewed journal that Dr. Angel was the editor-in-chief for. Now, it did appear after she left the New England Journal, but I would agree with that completely. If you have a medicine that's already established and a new one comes along, if they're going to enter the market, they either have to come in at a lower price, which often happens, or they need to come in and provide better patient results.
Dr. Angel, you wouldn't argue with that, would you?
They sometimes come in, they're launched at a lower price, and then they immediately jack the price up. The other drugs that are already in the market, they don't drop their price in response to the new competition. So quickly, the new drug jacks up its price, the others stay at the same price or jack their prices up. This industry acts like an oligopoly, not like a competitive market. There is no price competition. If there were truly price competition, you might see the price of brand name drugs drop. You never see that.
Alan Holm, let me ask you this question. If I take my drug prescription, I go over to the Peace Bridge in Buffalo or something, Niagara Falls, and go to Canada, and I walk into a drugstore in Canada. Am I in jeopardy of getting a bad set of drugs there? Because the way we hear about importing drugs, we keep hearing, this stuff is just unreputable.
If you do that, I think you're probably going to be safe. That is, if you go over, if you have a prescription from a doctor and you go over to a pharmacy in Canada and you know it's an established pharmacy and you get it from there. But that's entirely different from what is happening in the bulk of the situations where people are going on to a website that says it's Canada Rx. The FDA has done investigations, or the Food and Drug Administration. They found that websites that say they're Canada Rx, actually it's based in China, shipping medicines into the United States from Belize. So it's really a situation of buyer beware.
I understand. What if we had the FDA go to these places in Canada and certify them to be, like we certify meat and chicken, and USDA certifies them. What if we go to a pharmacy in Canada and say, this company is certified to be good? If you do stuff with them on the web, you're going to get quality stuff. And then, therefore, you should drive your business to these certified pharmacies that we have checked out to be okay. Anything wrong with that?
Well, I know that the FDA has concerns about that in terms of
they would be certifying.
Well, in terms of
they
what happens
when— They could send inspectors there, and they could sample the drugs.
I hear you, but I think the FDA is concerned about what really happens when the rubber meets the road. And the National Association of Boards of Pharmacies are very concerned about what happens when you have the practical effects. Let me just give you one example. A woman in my home state of Oregon, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. The doctor prescribed tamoxifen. She went and attempted to have it refilled at a Canadian pharmacy. The medicine came back, said it was tamoxifen. She took it. Everything was fine until she got sick.
And never happens in American pharmacies?
It will happen dramatically more frequently if you allow the integrity of the medicine supply in this country to be harmed by allowing these medicines to be able to come in over the internet.
Dr. Angel?
Oh, well, that's just nonsense. There is no reason to believe that drugs from registered pharmacies in Canada are any less safe than drugs obtained here in the United States, and some reason to believe that they're actually more safe. What the industry really is worried about is more Americans finding out the extent of the price gouging that goes on in this country. When they find out that they can get exactly the same drugs for half price in Canada, they're going to start to see through this industry. That's what they're really concerned about. But I still believe that importing drugs from Canada, while safe, is not a long-term solution to the price gouging. I mean, it makes no sense. It adds to transaction costs.
What would you suggest? Because we're running out of time. I want to get up with some of your suggestions in your book. Go ahead.
What I would suggest is that we import not the drugs, but some system for regulating prices. We are the only advanced country that does not have some form of price regulation. The Canadian price regulation is very mild, and drug companies still make a profit in Canada. They're not charities. They don't give their drugs away in Canada. What they say is that a Me Too drug that comes on the market can be priced no higher than the highest price Me Too drug already on the market. And then prices can't be increased any faster than the inflation rate. That seems to me very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Or a drug that is a new drug can't come on the market priced any higher than the median in seven other advanced countries, one of which is the United States. That's the kind of thing we need. The UK has a slightly different system. It regulates profits. It treats the drug companies much as a public utility, and it regulates their profit margins. Other countries regulate the total amount that can be spent on prescription drugs. There are all kinds of methods. We are the only country that doesn't have one.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if I can get a phone call.
And Ira, can I respond to that?
Please go ahead.
Listen to what she said. She wants to treat the pharmaceutical companies like public utilities, that she wants to import into the United States price controls and profit controls. If you want to have more medicines, you need to create incentives for more medicines. If you want to have fewer medicines, you should create disincentives. And profit controls and price controls are a clear disincentive, as you see by the lack of innovation in Canada, in Spain, in Italy, and increasingly less innovation in France, in Germany, and Japan.
Or for diseases like cystic fibrosis.
Let me respond.
I don't think that's a fair comment.
But I think you're being disingenuous with us on this one.
No, I'm not. There is a very substantial level of research that's going on with respect to cystic fibrosis. As a dad,
I'm on your side on this one.
I know. As a dad, would I like there to be more? Of course I would. But I'm not going to trash pharmaceutical companies for focusing on diseases like cancer or heart disease or Alzheimer's or other conditions that affect a dramatically larger patient population.
Okay. Marcia, did you want to say something?
Yes, I do. This industry is directed not toward innovation, but toward turning out Me Too drugs. And just look at 2002. In 2002, the FDA approved 78 new drugs, which meant that they could be sold, they could enter the market. But of those 78, only 17 contained new chemical compounds. The others were all different combinations and formulations of old drugs. And of those 17, only 7 were classified by the FDA as likely to be improvements over drugs already on the market. And of those 7, not one came from a major American drug company. They came from European companies or from small biotech companies. That's a measure of this so-called innovation. And then one more point.
Let me just jump in because I have to take care of a break here.
Okay.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Go ahead, Dr. Angel.
And one more thing, the implication, Mr. Homer's implication, is that somehow this is a peculiarly American industry. And if we mess with it in any way, all of these wonderful new drugs will dry up like they have, he implies, in Europe. But in fact, this is not an American industry. Of the top 10 companies, 5 are European, 5 are American. They all behave in much the same way. They're multinational. They all have the U.S. as their profit centers because they can get away with charging higher prices here. But their annual reports look much the same. It's a global industry.
You're not saying that you want to take drug development out of private hands, are you?
No, I did not say that.
You don't want to do away with the drug industry.
It should be very different. It should be reformed, and it should be reformed in such a way that it can't continue this price gouging, which really occurs on the backs of the American people. A recent study showed that about a third of senior citizens don't even fill all their prescriptions. They simply can't afford to. That's unconscionable.
Alan Homer, you're going to get the last word.
Well, thank you. This is a peculiarly American industry. And increasingly, look at where the R&D occurs. Look at what's happening with Novartis, a Swiss-based company. They've moved their worldwide headquarters for their R&D from Switzerland to the United States. The head of Serono, a Swiss-based company, has said if trends continue in Europe, he's going to move his entire program to the United States, or his entire company to the U.S. Dr. Angel says, well, no, I want to keep the drug companies, but she wants to turn them into public utilities. Public utilities are not going to come up with a cure for cancer, for Alzheimer's, and for other conditions that we need better treatments and hopefully cures.
Right. Can I answer very quickly?
Quick, 10 seconds.
Neither will the drug companies. The NIH will, and that's why Novartis is bringing its research center here, to feed on our unparalleled public output of basic research funded by the NIH.
All right. 4 out of 47 top medicines can be traced back to the NIH.
All right. We'll continue this debate, believe me, as we go on. My guests have been Marcia Angel, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and author of The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It, just out by Random House. Alan Homer, president and CEO of the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers Association of Manufacturers of America. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next week, we're moving out of town. Well, we don't have to, but we're going to San Antonio because they love us so much there. We're going to be at the University of Texas Health Science Center. And we'd love to have you in our audience for the program. If you'd like to join our audience, get there to ask questions, watch us do the program. You can surf over to the Texas Public Radio website at www.tpr.org, www.tpr.org, for directions how to get on the program. Our producer is Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our web producer and director. And if you'd like, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.